Testing, testing. Okay, sounds live. Hi, I'm Vinny Gupta of Ethereum and the Hexyart project, and I wanted to talk to you today a little bit about housing and housing as a technological anachronism. So basically, if you built a car in the same way that you build a house, you would have a succession of skilled tradesmen who would visit your garage one after another over a 3 to 5 year period, and one would lay down a steel frame, and then another would come and deliver wheels, and then a third would come and fit the tires to the wheels and then discover they didn't fit properly on the axles. A fourth would come with a bolt cutter and start the entire process over again. And this would go on for a number of years until at the end of it, you had a car that looked exactly like the car that your architect designed for you, but apart from the fact that everything leaked. The process by which we produce housing is completely anachronistic. The manual nature of the trades and the building regulations which keep those trades in exactly their relationships to each other go back to the medieval guild systems, and there are a whole variety of split agendas inside a market capitalism that produce incentives which are pathological in terms of keeping housing expensive rather than enabling mass production of housing which would make it cheap. Buckminster Fuller was really the pioneer of this approach when he suggested that we should build housing in factories to keep the price as low as humanly possible so that everyone in the world could have a house. And he suggested, instead of working from the conventional building industry, which is essentially a science of baked mud, that we can move to aerospace manufacturing techniques and work in things like Finchy aluminium, foam insulation and adhesives. And this approach was tried from the 1940s, maybe late 1930s onwards, in the form of things like Dymaxion deployment units and the Dymaxion home, but Buckminster Fuller never managed to achieve scale, and as a result we remain stuck. Everything else in the world is on these downward curves of exponential price and performance. So computers, every 10 years the available processing time goes down by 1,000, hard disk doubles every year and a half. We contract time and space in dramatic ways in technology, but housing remains static, and as a result, everything else in the universe is kind of changing size, but housing remains the same size. Everything else is shrinking and miniaturizing and becoming ephemeralized. Housing remains stubbornly industrial bricks and mortar. Everything stands in place, and nothing changes. And the result of this is that we're in a position where housing is eating a larger and larger and larger share of the world's income. The problem with this is that if you have to spend $1 million to buy a home, you're taking the amount of money that could have spent, you could have bought one reasonably priced home and 9 industrial machine lathes, and it's all going into real estate, and real estate produces nothing. It provides some services in the form of shelter, but there's no expansion of our manufacturing capability, there's very little knowledge acquisition or learning. Real estate is just a necessary thing for the human species to continue to exist, but it doesn't generate anything. There's no generative aspect to it. And as a result, as you wind up with housing taking up a larger and larger share of the world's capital, there is less and less and less capital left over for investing in everything else, which means that manufacturing economies stall. You want to recapitalize to do things like switch over to CAD/CAM manufacturing and 3D printing and all the rest of this kind of fab lab technology, but you can't get these projects adequately capitalized because all that money is tied up in real estate speculation, where even if everything you touch is successful, you still don't wind up with any useful products at the end of the day that generate another generation of wealth return. So we're stuck in this downward spiral of wealth, because eventually all that we'll be left with is enormous numbers of expensive houses in which our savage descendants live as cavemen. Maybe. Somebody come check my field of view? Can you check my field of view?
I can.
Yeah. All misty and mysterious and beautiful.
Yes. London smog.
London smog. So, basically...
So, housing. This is a very interesting case study, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. So basically, I want to know how far along the deck do I have to be that I'm in field of view?
Go back a bit. I would say that there we are.
Okay.
So you are... Yep, and then you've got the view.
Okay, could you push the red button on top and it'll start recording? Are the numbers going down?
No, they're going up.
That's perfect. Thank you, Anne. So, in my own instance, I just rented a new house in far north London, an area called Tottenham Hale. And it's part of this new build construction that you can see going back kind of the next three or four blocks over. And it's quite an interesting development because the entire thing was built prior to the Tottenham riots, when it was expected to be luxury housing, and then the locals burned a third of Tottenham to the ground, more or less. Maybe not, I'm exaggerating a little. But it generated a feeling of fear around racial unease and tension in the area. And as a result, the development essentially stalled, and many of the buildings here are substantially underpopulated. The entire area is heated with a single integrated heating system. So there are some smokestacks over there which emit almost nothing, and they generate hot water for heating 2,000 homes in a super efficient boiler. And what comes out of this is this whole thing which looks very much like standard new build, but is actually carbon neutral for heating. Very nicely designed solar gain and all the rest of that stuff. But the notion that I had to move into an area that had large-scale civil unrest only a couple of years ago to be able to afford to live in a city is a huge part of the paradox that you get inside of capitalism, right? Because we wind up auction pricing housing in the cities, everybody wants to live centrally, everybody wants to live in the nice houses. There are some variations of aesthetics, but not enough that you get a generally diverse adoption. What you see in London is that most of the interesting people live in terrible housing, converted warehouses or warehouses that are really just box rooms built inside of a warehouse illegally. Tens of thousands of London's most interesting people live under these kind of conditions because we have a system of building codes which is intended to project and maintain an artificial model of wealth. We pretend that we're still the British Empire, that we still have wealth and power, that we're still sitting at the centre of the trade networks which pool resources from all over the world. But in actual fact, you know, we've gone through an industrial decline. Wealth is massively concentrated in the hands of the few, and the only model that we have for affordable housing is basically Soviet model concrete blocks, which, because the architecture is bad, produce terrible living conditions. So I really want to suggest that this is a core challenge, because it's a place where human life and market capitalism intersect in a very brutal sort of biopolitic way. The fact that in London women have roughly 0.2 of a child less per woman than in any other part of the country is because we're in a position where we simply can't afford to have children. People move to Birmingham, one of the kind of feeder cities for London, when they want to have children. Bristol is another place, because rents are half the price, and if you've got a decent job in London, you can then move, you know, kind of horizontally and up a tier as you move out to the kind of edges of the country. And I say edges of the country because really what we've seen is this concentration of everything in a single city-state followed by this hinterlandization of the rest of the country. We're projecting things like high-speed rail as a way of tying the nation back together again. But in all intents and purposes, when you have only a single centre, you wind up with the same thing that you see in Finland or in Iceland or to some degree in Sweden, where there's basically a single nexus in which everything revolves. What then happens is you wind up auction pricing land in that nexus, so you wind up with a dual pool, inefficient and expensive housing jacks prices with no real utility, and then auction pricing jacks the price of land and then also the price of housing with it. So what we wind up with is massive competition for a relatively small number of slots in the big cities, pushing an enormous network of extractive industries that try and concentrate the wealth and then spend all of it on real estate, which produces no fundamental return other than perhaps social network centrality if you want to be able to reach people without a long commute. And the total impact of that is that we stalled the global economy in 2008, largely because of defective mortgages. So my suggestion is that the entire stability of global capitalism pivots on our inability to deploy affordable housing and our inability to decentralize society in such a way that you don't have everybody competing for the few same square kilometers of Tokyo, New York, London, San Francisco. We have to create a system in which there is the potential of taking the auction pricing back out of land, and the correct tax strategies might be part of that, and taking the just brutal inefficiency out of housing creation. And I think that if we approach that as a design challenge, over the next 20 years, as we need to find good housing for another 1 billion or 2 billion people that pull themselves out of poverty, we could see new models of land use and new models of physical construction that result in economic freedom and the freeing up of enormous amounts of capital, which you then go back into productive assets and begin to pull us out of poverty. Because you must remember that most people still live in shanty towns and villages and grow their own food for a living. You know, only a tiny percent of you human beings have jobs. Mortgages are an unbelievable luxury good, and that crisis is going to continue until we deploy efficient solutions, and that's going to mean industrial mass production and some kind of new economic model around financing. So those are my thoughts, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the day. Take care.
One kill.
Oh, well done.
I've definitely had better days.
It just
turned
so quickly.
Yes, yes. Well, I didn't. The sun went down like just over the 10 minutes I was doing it.
Oh.
But that's actually quite nice because what you get is this kind of fading out. You know, the light begins to grey out, the sun goes down, the colours change. So there's actually something happening in the background. I hope it will turn out nicely.
So, what did you talk about?
What I talked about was two things. Firstly, the fundamental inefficiency in the ways that we construct housing, and secondly, how auction pricing of real estate ties up all the world's production productive capital in